Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com. That's abilitychiro.com.
Welcome back to yet another edition of The Thought Police with me and Mike Graham and him, Matt Kelly. We are still in the grip of it all. I don't suppose anybody's terribly surprised by that. I'm feeling fine, actually.
Yeah.
I'm feeling all right. I mean, I don't know if I've... I think I've had it, you know. I've been sort of starting to talk to a lot of people who have told me that since about sort of the beginning of December...
I remember you were really ill, weren't you?
I was... Well, I wasn't really ill, but I had a kind of persistent... Yeah. Kind of cold that never went away anywhere.
Did you have a dry mouth?
No, well, I occasionally did. I had a dry throat quite a bit.
Yeah.
And I had a bit of a cough at times.
Yeah.
But, I mean, people have said there's all sorts of different manifestations of it. You know, you could have had it quite mildly.
Yeah.
But, you know, had it for a while and not had it really badly.
Because coronavirus, it's as a sort of genre of viruses, is just the same as the common cold, isn't it?
More or less.
This one has mutated.
More or less. COVID-19. It's a bit worse than that. And people, you know, I got attacked.
No, but the family of diseases is called coronavirus. And this one is COVID-19.
It's called that because it's shaped, when you look at it under a microscope, like the corona of around the sun.
That's right.
Apparently.
With these weird little sort of tentacle
things. Do you know, I didn't
mention
this to you, but I got attacked by, you know, that awful Jessica Simor, a QC barrister, right? Who actually tweeted underneath or over a tweet that Talk Radio had put out of me basically having a laugh with a guy who rang into the show, who was saying, "Oh, I think you're taking it seriously enough, Mike." You know, and I'm going, "It's like the cold. It's like a common cold. More people die of the flu. It's all that kind of thing." And he said, "Well, you know, you keep telling people not to panic." I said, "Well, what do you want me to do? You want me to tell them to panic?
Everyone,
you know,
right now is the time to panic."
And he said, "No." I said, "Well, what's your message to them then?" He said, "Well, we're all going to die." I said, "Well,"
he said that.
Yeah. So I said, "Well, that's not exactly going to comfort people, right?"
Oh,
anyway,
I
kid you not, and this is a woman who takes herself so seriously, right? She's like the female equivalent of Jolyon Moron. She goes, "The Talk Radio must take this tweet down because it's going to cause lives. It's going to cause people to die."
Oh. God.
I was just like,
do you know
really?
What, mate? I am so glad I'm not on. I know I keep saying this.
I know.
Week in, week out. Twitter.
I know.
Get off it.
I know.
It's shit.
It really is.
It really is.
But here's the thing. Last time you and I did this last week, you were telling me about your glasses, right? And how you buy these cheap glasses. And then you only get rid of it once they start falling apart. Well, I noticed the glasses you're wearing only seem to have one leg, or whatever you call it. What do you call it? Is
an
it
arm.
A leg? An
okay.
arm.
Yeah.
So where's the other one?
Well, what happens with these? I mean, these cheap glasses. So when
you couldn't go to work with us,
they do fall apart, right? I've got about 40 pairs of these. But
have you been stockpiling them?
What happens is when the screw pops out of one of the arms, right, and it falls off.
Right.
Instead of throwing it away, I stick it in a drawer. Right, just in case, because you can still sort of hold it.
Can you sort
face.
Of fix one part into another part and have?
Well, you could do, I guess, but it's all a bit fiddly. I mean, you know, have you ever tried screwing in one of those spectacle screws?
No.
Especially if you can't bloody see.
When it comes to anything like that, I am completely useless.
Well, if you can't see the bloody thing, it's a problem anyway. So
I mean, here's how useless I am. Right? Yeah. I went and did a sort of husband-like thing a couple of weekends ago.
Yeah.
I took the car, took the other half's car to the garage to put air in the tyres, to put petrol in it, and to buy some windscreen washer for it, right?
Right.
Did it all,
which
I thought was a pretty amazing thing. The windscreen washer stuff that comes in a big gallon thing, right?
Yeah.
But somehow I hadn't checked that the top of it had been pressed in.
Right.
to the, you know, and it's like a big plastic sort of flask-like thing, right? Now, the top has to be out so you can turn it.
Right.
And it was stuck in.
Oh, I see.
And I couldn't get it out.
Is this the windscreen washer stuff?
Yeah.
Have you ever managed to fill one of those things without spilling it all over the engine?
No.
Because it all glugs out, doesn't it?
I think what you should really do is get one of those...
One of the funnel things.
Funnels.
Yeah. But who the hell's got a funnel?
Well, I mean, we've
who
got
Who carries
them?
A funnel
we've
in
We've got
car?
Them for cooking purposes, but we haven't... Yeah. I can't exactly start putting a windscreen washer in it,
but
otherwise,
why don't
you know,
they just put it in something that bloody pours without spilling it?
Well, do you know, one I had... I don't know if you've ever had one of those cars that takes AdBlue.
No, I haven't, but I know what it is.
Yeah. That's a similar thing, because you buy that. I never knew what it was. Yeah. My last car took it, right? And it's basically, there's two holes where where you open the petrol cap.
Yeah.
There's one for AdBlue, one for diesel, right?
Right.
So at some point or other, this warning sign comes up on the dashboard saying, please refill your diesel exhaust or whatever it's called, the AdBlue.
Yeah.
I didn't even know what they were talking about. So I went to a garage and saw that you could buy it. So I bought it.
Yeah.
And I tried to pour it in, and it was all over my shoes.
Oh, man.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
Disaster. Well, you know, do you ever use those, like we do? I'm looking at one now, those long-life milk bottles. Cartons.
Well, we sometimes get the cartons because when we, like, go on holiday or something, we leave them in the fridge.
I mean, so what I discovered after 50 years of using these things last week, I saw somebody on Facebook, one of those posts, and it said, you've been doing it wrong forever. Right?
What, you've been snipping the top?
No. So these are the ones with the little sort of screw things at the top.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, so it's got a little cap. Mm. So you unscrew it. And then, of course, you pour it into your tea or your coffee with the hole bit close to the mug. Right?
Okay.
And it glugs, goes all over the place. Coffee splashes all over the place. Disaster.
Right. Yeah.
Every time.
Right.
But if you hold it the other way around so that
the
hole is at the top.
Right.
Right. Then air comes in and it pours completely normally.
Oh, really?
So I reckon next time you fill up your washing thing, try holding the bottle kind of upside so that and then you've just got to sort of aim it.
Right.
But at least then, once you've
got
it in,
the problem with this AdBlue stuff, right, is that it's not really fuel. So you don't think of it as fuel, but it's kind of slimy.
Ooh.
So when you get it on your hands, it doesn't feel right.
Do you need to wear like those?
Well, maybe
gloves.
I saw a woman wearing those on the underground. Today.
Maybe it would maybe it disinfects you from coronavirus.
Well, do you know what my sister told me the weekend? She said that she was really happy. She said, "I can't get any hand wash anywhere because it's all sold out. Even Americans are doing it, right?" She said, "But I found an old bottle of Popoff vodka down in the basement.
Fantastic."
And I said, "Well, what do you drink it?" She's like, "No, I've got to use it as hand sanitizer."
Well,
you know,
the other thing that works is Sarsen's distilled malt vinegar.
Yes,
you know the white stuff,
well,
the white vinegar.
What I learned, for example, that you can clean the showerhead with vinegar, and that works really well.
So vinegar's like a really great disinfectant.
But I'm hopeless at anything to do with. I mean, I can just about put like a Billy bookcase together from IKEA. But that's about as far as it goes.
Yeah.
Anything more complicated than that.
What's that got to do with washing your hands?
Well, I mean, we were talking originally about using a little...
Screwing things. Have you jumped back in the conversation to that point?
I've gone back to the opticians.
You're like when you press rewind on one of an Amazon film and it goes back at 32 times
it's because we haven't
finished... too far.
Well, because we haven't finished the first conversation. So I say to the mother of my children, do you know, I've never in the 25 years that I've known her or thereabouts, I've never actually finished a sentence. Because she's always interrupting me.
Yeah, really?
And then she says...
God, she should be on radio.
She should. And then she says things like, well, you didn't tell me you were doing that. I'm like, well, that's because you didn't listen to the end of the conversation we were having because you interrupted me so many times. I didn't get to tell you, oh, by the way, next week I'm doing this.
Yeah.
You know.
Well,
bloody women.
That's what happens. They don't
listen.
That's
what happens. Anyway, my point is that I'm no good around the house.
No.
And she occasionally complains about that and says, you know, what I should have is a proper man around here to do proper jobs.
Well, why don't you get an odd job man?
Well, they're sort of... We have
like
a guy that does the garden.
Like a chattily...
She doesn't
lover.
Like to pay for things, though.
No.
She just doesn't like doing it.
Well, that's a problem.
And also, it's quite difficult to find a decent odd job man.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I've got a couple of things that need doing in my flat in London, right? For example, I've got a coat hanger.
Yeah.
Sort of, you know, a row of coat hanger things. Yeah. Which one of my kids pulled out of the wall.
Right.
About 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And I can't get it back in.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
What is it? Two screws?
It's basically roll plugs because it's you know, it's a proper, you know, it's more than you need a drill, which I don't have.
Have you not got a drill?
We've got one in Sussex. I haven't got a drill.
Why don't you just bring the bloody... To put your fucking coat hanger back up.
I don't know how to use a drill, right?
What?
No.
How can you not know how to use a drill?
If I used the drill, I would probably drill through an electric socket or some kind of pipe, right?
Yeah.
Because I haven't got the wherewithal to go checking it like a plumber would or like an electrician would.
All right, fair enough.
It's not something that you should mess around with, right? So I sometimes get my landlord to come around, but I don't like to ask him to do it because he's done it like twice, right?
not very well.
Because the holes are not very good, right?
Is it going into plasterboard? Plasterboard. Does it sort of flake a bit?
Yeah, a little bit.
That's lousy.
And I've got the same problem with one of my curtain rails as well, which came out in the summer, right? Because somebody leaned on it and it just came out because it was so dry and hot, right? So I need to put new curtain rails up. Now, I could ask the landlord to do it.
Well, why don't you just fill the holes in, paint over it and get one of those coat stands instead?
Well, I don't really like coat stands.
Ah, but you prefer a coat rack hanging off the wall.
Well, it's down by the side. It's just there's nothing there.
Great.
You know.
With two holes in the wall.
Yeah.
That's your preference over a coat stand.
Yes.
Right.
Because it doesn't take up any room.
All right. Okay.
Where's your coat stand?
I've got a whole cellar full of coats,
mate. Have you?
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm a coat professional.
Are you?
Yeah.
Well, I've got them all hanging up in the wardrobe. So that's anyway. My point is that you know, if I was any good at that sort of stuff, I would have done that.
Yeah.
But trying to find somebody, there's a janitor that walks around where I live, right?
Yeah. Mild-mannered.
Hong Kong fooey. At one point, wanted to buy my old car off me.
Yeah.
And then ended up selling it to somebody else. But I saw him one day, and he said, I do old jobs. I said, great. Well, why don't you text me this afternoon and come up when I've finished doing whatever it is I'm doing. I've got a couple of things I need doing.
Yeah.
Never seen him since. He's now left.
Because of that?
He didn't come up. And then... He's not there.
Maybe he just realised it was a mission too far.
Maybe. And yeah.
He didn't have to
send him over the edge.
He just didn't have the face.
So now
to
we've got a new
you.
Guy, right?
Yeah.
Who's a bit freaks me out slightly. You know?
Why?
He came and knocked on the door one day.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
And I don't like people knocking on my door.
No.
Right? I don't.
Although, to be fair to him, that is how to knock on a door. But go on. Yeah.
Yeah, but this is inside a building, right?
Yeah.
So we've got a bell outside the building.
Right.
You don't walk into the building and knock
it's
on the
disturbing,
door.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I look out through the little peephole and I see that it's him. So I let him in. Or I answer it. And he says, he points at one of the lights because we've got these automatic lights that come on when you walk, you know?
Yeah.
Motion detectors
types.
And he went, that light up there is never off.
Right.
And that one over there is never on. And I said, right.
Why are you swapping around?
He said, have you noticed whether they go on or off when you walk past them? I said, not really. I'm thinking, why is he knocking on my fucking door to ask you this, right? So I went,
that's brilliant.
I said, I'll check it out next time I go out. Of course, you know, I didn't see him for about a week then.
That is fantastic.
And the next time I saw him, he's like, did you have a chance to check out the lights? I was like, no, I haven't noticed. Because, you know, I go out in the morning, I'm not really all there.
Yeah.
I'm not looking at the bloody lights.
No.
He's like, I might have to fix them then. I'm like, okay then.
Real cracker,
so I don't, you know, I don't really want to invite this guy into my house to fix my, you know, curtains. I mean, it's just bizarre, isn't it?
Similarly,
down in Sussex, it's quite hard to find people
who
will do like a small job like that.
Yeah.
You know,
because what is it? It's like a tenner.
Yeah, what are you going to pay somebody to do that?
Yeah,
you know.
But you've got a drill in Sussex, haven't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
But I don't use it.
Right.
She uses it.
Just get her to come and do it.
She won't though.
No.
She hardly.
Does
ever
she
come.
Never stay in your London.
She does sometimes, but not very often. I mean, they've been coming up backwards and forwards.
Invite me to dinner.
Right.
I'll come along with some raw plugs and I'll fix the bloody.
Well, we might have to do that soon
because.
All the restaurants will be shut.
I know.
So the only way we'll be able to dine out together, which we've never really done, have we?
No, we haven't, no. Well, we have at sort of things, but
we've
never
things,
done it in a
domestic... We've never actually been out properly, which we should do.
We should definitely do that.
But of course,
I feel we're ready for that.
Yeah. Funnily enough, talking of people to go out with, another mate of ours, who I'm not going to name as well, because I sent him it was a quite shocking thing happened over the weekend, a guy that we both know, Paul Field, who worked for the Mail,
terrible.
Suddenly dropped dead at the age of 48, right?
Poor guy. Nice
so I guy. Sent this other guy a message to say, Christ almighty, you know, that's, you know, because he's even older than I am, but he's still working over there. And he's just come back from South Africa and had a bit of a cough. So he's self-isolating for a week.
Oh, God.
So, I mean, it gets to the point where you know people who are doing it.
I know. Poor old Paul. I mean, I know this is the cliche, but he looked to be as fit as a fiddle. He obviously just had a...
Well, he might have had some kind of congenital heart problem.
That,
I mean, because some people actually have that and they don't even know about it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, until it's too late.
Yeah.
And he's got a family with kids. I mean, I didn't
Three
know
kids.
He wasn't a close friend, but I met him several times after he left the Mail and he was always...
Because he worked at the People, apparently, at one point.
That's right. He was at Trinity Mirror for a while. And then he went to work on the National Enquirer.
That's right.
And then he was... helped launch Mail Plus, which is their
right.
their sort of app.
It's their new thing which yeah. they're using to do podcasts.
That's
and all
right,
that.
Yeah. Mm. So and then he left to join a tech company. But it just yeah. shows you, doesn't it? Take every bloody day while you've got it. You know,
I know.
Because you never know.
Well, I mean, I'm sort of feeling a bit like that now, because yeah. I'm feeling a bit like we're kind of heading towards the old, you know, the point at which you never yeah. really know.
If the end came tomorrow, though,
yeah.
right, apart from the obvious sadness for your family and all yeah, of that, yeah. would you look back and say, I had a decent spin?
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely.
I would too.
I've had a great time.
Yeah.
Listen, I have done most of the things I've ever wanted yeah. to do. There's very few things I haven't done.
Yeah.
That I'm going.
No,
I wish I'd done that. I mean, yeah. you've got that story from the Dublin nightclub, which you could have gone, you know, that could have been an interesting evening.
That was one regret.
Yes. But yeah. I mean, no, I mean, we talked about this the last time when you accused me of being a psychopath, which the mother of my children found very amusing. She said, he's got you spot on, she said. But I've always just kind of led with sort of energy and, yeah. and kind of enthusiasm.
Yeah.
And I've never really been down. I've been lucky, I suppose. Yeah. I've never felt
you've always
depressed.
Been...
I mean, because I've had plenty of things happen to me that could have depressed yeah. people.
But the thing about you, my observation about what makes you a distinct personality is that you're always up for it.
Yeah.
You know, you are kind of,
yeah.
you know, right, let's go and do something. You know, let's right. do this.
Yeah, and if yeah. things go wrong, yeah. sometimes I actually respond better.
Yeah.
In fact, if you were to analyse my career, you might say that when things were going really well,
yeah.
that was when I was at my worst, because right. I'd sort of misbehave, yeah. I'd get myself into all sorts of trouble, almost like it was too easy,
yeah.
or it was too good.
Yeah.
So I'd kind of throw something down in front of myself to kind of make sure I had something to jump yeah. over.
I have managed almost. Consistently to screw things up for yeah. myself as we go
but
along.
But you've had some great jobs, though.
Oh, yeah, fantastic.
I mean, not least the ones that took you to Argentina and Spain and all that.
Fabulous. Fabulous. Mm. I mean, I spent 2 years effectively working abroad
yeah.
with some wonderful people. And
do you still see all those people?
Yeah. So, I mean, some of them. Federico Kirschbaum, who's the editor-in-chief at Clarín, which is the big newspaper in Buenos Aires right. in Argentina. He's like a very close friend
is
of
he?
Mine. Yeah, yeah.
And do you see him? Does he come here?
Yeah. Well, we're Facebook friends right. and we see each other at least two or three times a year yeah. when we meet at various functions and conferences.
See, that's great, because yeah. I think that as a sort of... Considering the journey, I was talking to Emma and my daughter about this the other week when she was here, that you kind of all know each other from a certain period of Fleet Street, because it was yeah. quite a small
yeah.
group of... I mean, there was a lot of us, but we kind yeah. of all knew each other.
You cross-pollinated, you know, more than I did, though. You worked on different papers.
Well, that wasn't
you?
My fault. It was because I kept yeah. getting fired.
Yeah. You know? I yeah. only really worked
but
on
also,
the mail.
But also, no, do you know what set me up so well was working in New York? Because yeah. standing in Costello's bar... Basically, I met everyone.
Yeah.
Because everyone who came to New York, and in those days, a lot of people did.
Yeah.
You know, everyone from, like, David English would be there yeah. one day. The next day, Sir Nicholas Lloyd would be there.
Yeah.
You know, including all the people that actually worked there. Hugh McIlvenny was over for yeah. a while, and he based himself in New York State for a bit, you know. So every kind of senior journalist
yeah.
at every single newspaper at one point or another yeah. was standing at the bar.
Yeah.
And we were always there.
Amazing.
You know, so that kind of gave me... an insight into all the different people yeah. that I ended up then meeting, yeah. you know?
I remember, I think I might have mentioned this a long time ago, but Martin Dunn, who was
yeah.
in the...
I know Martin,
the
still
tabloid,
now.
Yeah. yeah. Which one was it? The Daily News?
Daily News, yeah.
Daily News. And he took me for lunch at, I think it was a place called Mary's near Fifth Avenue and Central Park, somewhere
don't
around
know.
There.
Yeah.
But he said, at the time, he said, this is the place.
Right.
But we were sat in what I thought was the worst table in the joint.
Right.
Because it was right by the door. And every time the door opened... someone walked past you and a little bit of air drafted.
Oh, God,
past
I hate that.
Yeah, but I said to him, he said to me, this is the best table in the place because
really?
Everybody has to see you as you
right,
walk past and
right.
like deliberately positioned
yes.
there for the for all
that's
the influence.
That's very New York. I remember yeah. when I was living there, the Four Seasons was the sort of, there was a lot of power restaurants, but
yeah.
the Four Seasons, not the hotel, but the restaurant,
yeah.
was the place to be. And they had two rooms.
Right.
And everybody used to talk about Siberia.
Yeah.
If you're in the wrong room,
yeah.
it was like awful.
Yeah.
And I remember taking my wife, I think it was our wedding anniversary or something, and I must have called in a favour from somewhere, because
yeah.
I managed to get a table in the big room,
yeah.
which was where the sort of the water was.
Yeah.
And you literally looked over there, and there was Barbara Walters,
yeah.
and there was Henry Kissinger,
yeah.
and she was blown away. I mean, yeah. I was kind of going, yeah, well,
fantastic.
Yeah, this is no problem.
Have you seen, do you watch Curb Your Enthusiasm?
Yes.
Have you seen the latest?
I haven't seen the latest one, actually.
So
do you know what? I wasn't yeah. sure if I wanted to, because it was... When I first discovered yeah. it, I thought, this is the funniest thing ever.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's very much yeah. a New York humour, but in
yeah.
LA.
Yeah. No, I think he's come back. I know what you mean. It sort of dipped for a series
yeah,
or two.
Yeah, for one or two, it just kind of got
he's
a bit too much.
He's on series 10 now, but the last,
really?
The very last episode, the most recent episode, it's about him discovering that he's always put into the ugly side of the restaurant. There's a beautiful side and an ugly side, and his struggle with that. But the worst one for that in the world is the Brasserie Lip in Saint-Germain in Paris.
Oh, really?
Where they have an upstairs, which is basically completely just full of tourists, right? And they've got the downstairs front half is for people who are very well connected, but not quite all
not
that.
Quite there.
And then the back half is for like the for Macron and his mates and the cabinet ministers and all of that. And so
it's, so the people are always trying to get to the other bit.
Absolutely. And it's the most depressing thing when you walk in, you think, well, I'm not one of these scuzzy tourists. And they just and the fella just doesn't even look at you, just walks you up to this.
See, I don't know Paris very well. And I always find restaurants in Paris to be really... really difficult to navigate because the people are so rude.
Yeah, they are, yeah.
You know, that's we went to Paris for a sort of, you know, anniversary a few years back, and we stayed, funnily enough, outside in a part, I can't remember the name of it, it was one of these little sort of satellite towns, which you could get the double-decker train. I've always thought the double-decker train, one of the greatest ideas ever.
Yeah, yeah,
you know. And we were sort of wandering about, staggering about around near where the... I guess the we started off at the Eiffel Tower, and then we kind of walked around, ended up at the tunnel where old Princess Diana met her maker.
Yeah.
And we went off and found a place to go for lunch. And it was empty, right?
Yeah.
And this guy was just like pointing to this kind of part of the place. And I was like, I'm going to sit there. And it was like they were sort of doing it like theatre seating, filling it from the back. Yeah. I'm like, no, I want to sit out here. No, you sit there. And I'm like, no. We walked out, right? Well, you know where we ended up eating?
Yeah.
Prep. We ended up going to Prep because I'm like, I'm not doing it. We went to like two or three places. They were all so bloody rude. I said, I'm not putting up with this.
Yeah.
You know, I'm paying them money. I don't care if we're in France.
Well, we went to, when I first started going out with Nadia, we had a first weekend away in Paris, right? And Lloyd Embley, who at that time was just a friend of mine at the Mirror and is now the editor-in-chief.
He didn't straddle the empire of Reach PLC.
Lloyd Embley, who knows about food, right? Mm. He said, go to this place. It's fantastic. It's the Orangerie Brasserie, right, in the Ile de la Cité, right? So I booked a table for two.
Oh, yeah.
And we walk in, and the first thing, I haven't got a jacket on, right? So the first thing is, right, take a jacket.
Right.
So they produce a row of about six jackets, all stinking a beer.
Right.
So I put this bloody jacket
on. That's
on.
Never a good way to start,
right.
Is
so
it?
Already I feel like a complete twat, right? And then they lead us to our table.
They only give you a tie as well.
And it's like,
soup.
It's a very kind of intimate room, right?
Yeah.
So it's dark, candle-lit,
yes.
Everything, big, massive wine glasses,
right.
Lots of silver service. But the table we're put on, it literally is next... is butting up to the table next to us,
right.
Where there's another couple trying to have an intimate dinner.
Oh, yeah.
And then the table next to them
right.
is like... So when the people in the middle wanted to get out to go to the toilets, the people had to come and move the tables, right?
Right.
Honestly, like a game of Jenga.
Yeah, yeah.
And Nadia is sitting there and has been built up to this lovely night out, and she just starts crying.
Oh, right? God.
And is weeping about how awful this thing is. And I then have to start explaining... To the two
and
Americans.
And are your French any good or not?
No, well, they were American next
to
us. And basically, we all just agreed that this was one of the shittest restaurants
experiences
ever.
Well, I hope you told Emily that you managed to get that wrong.
I did, awful.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
I had a very bad experience. Well, not that bad, but I mean, I was around the back of Farringdon one time when I was working at the Express.
Yeah.
And there's a guy called Chris Williams. And he was with his girlfriend then, who was about to become his second wife. And they were in this restaurant just opposite Smithfield, basically.
Yeah.
And they said, why don't you come and join us, you know? And I'd been doing one of those probably, you know, lunchtime drinking session, bit of an evening one, then went to join them. Right? It was the middle of winter. And I remember it was a very nice little restaurant, but all the tables, like you just said, were very close together.
Yeah.
So I kind of swept.
Was it a French restaurant?
I think it was.
Yeah. I bet you I know which one it is.
Yeah, it's near Snow Hill Police Station.
Yeah, yeah.
It's on that side, right?
I know.
And I think they had blue and white tablecloths as well. So I'm walking sort of around the table because they're both sitting, one on each side. There's a banquette. And he said, oh, why don't you come around here? So I slide through the two tables, the little gap that's there, right? And I think I was either wearing a coat or carrying a coat.
Yeah.
And suddenly I hear this kind of clatter. And I turn around, right? And I've knocked the wine bucket, the ice bucket full of wine and ice all over the table next to him, right? Who happened to be in the middle of eating their meals. Oh, the two women, right? And it was, they were just awash with ice and water. And I was I said, I'm really sorry. I said, listen, I'm very happy to get you another bottle of wine. I really apologise for that. And they were like, yeah, and they sort of calmed down a bit, right?
Yeah.
So we then go through the process. I had some dinner, or maybe just drinks, can't remember. At the end of the evening, or about an hour later, the waiter comes up to me, right? And he hands me this bill.
Yeah.
And these two are sitting there. I said, sorry, what's this? He said, oh, you said they said you would pay for their dinner.
Yeah.
I said, no, I didn't. I did not say I would pay for their dinner. No, I said I would buy them another bottle of wine because I knocked that one over.
Yeah.
So I'm not paying for the dinner.
Yeah. What else did you want me to pay for?
You ruined our dinner. We had to order another one. I said, well, they can pay for that.
Yeah.
I said, you don't have to pay for two dinners. It's called an accident.
Honestly, mate.
You know?
Some people.
And then I said, look, I don't mind paying for your wine. I said, but I'll tell you what, do you know what? Now you can fuck off. I'm not paying for your wine. This huge row ensued, and poor old Chris is sitting there, because you know he's quite mild-mannered, doesn't really like all this, and I'm going, it's all kicking off.
You've only been in the place 6 minutes.
Unbelievable. And they ended up storming off.
That's great.
Paid for their own wine and their own food.
I'll bet you it's the Café du Musée.
Yes, I think it might have been.
The reason I know that
I think
is
it might have been.
Again, because we lived down the road from there, and that was a regular haunt of me and Nadia's. And
it's really nice food.
They used to do a fantastic, I think it was a beef suet pudding.
Oh, yeah.
For some reason, marvellous.
I've got a feeling I didn't eat. I've got a feeling I just went and joined them for drinks.
We got barred out for some reason.
Did you?
About arguing about wine. But they were the days when we'd drink three bottles of wine at a dinner. You know, it was like...
Well, I mean, in those days, I was drinking three bottles of wine before I even made dinner.
Yeah.
You know, that was before I got... I mean, Ian Walker and I used to go to the Oxo Tower for lunch and just stand at the bar. They knew us so well.
Yeah.
And we used to drink this stuff called Mad Fish, which was Australian sort of Chardonnay, because that was all we drank in those days. I mean, I can't touch Chardonnay now, because that really heavy yellow Chardonnay that everybody used to drink, you know, Wolf Blass and all that.
Yeah.
And we always knew if we had the third bottle, that was probably a mistake.
Yeah.
But we quite often had three bottles for lunch between us and no food.
That's great. There used to be a guy in the Liverpool Echo who's long dead now, but he used to have and he was an alcoholic, no question, but he used to drink a drink called the Octogin.
Oh, yeah.
Which was eight double measures of gin in a pint glass topped up with tonic water, which is more than half a pint of gin.
That's amazing.
That was his lunchtime drink.
That's incredible. Do you know what I've got, which was brought to me by a wine tasting person that comes onto my show quite a bit? This new thing, it's a new thing called, I think it's called a compact gin or something like miniature gin, and it comes in a very small bottle, and there's a thimble attached to it, right?
Yeah.
And it's so concentrated, this stuff, that you pour it into a thimble, and that's the same as an actual, like, double measure or something
really?
Like that. Yeah, it's amazing.
It must be like 100 proof.
I don't know what it's like. I mean, I said to her, what happens if I drink the whole bottle? She said, nobody's ever done that. So I think,
there's
a challenge for one weekend. Yeah. But literally, you take a thimbleful, put it in a glass.
Yeah.
And then fill it up with tonic, and it tastes like you put loads of gin in it. I mean, it's really incredible.
And it is alcoholic.
No, it's made here. Yeah, it's English stuff. It's made somewhere in London.
Did you know that gin is basically just vodka with flavourings?
No.
The base of gin
Well, the base of all spirits.
It is vodka.
It's just distilled.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not made from potatoes, though, which vodka is.
Yeah, but that's potato vodka.
Right.
Most vodka is made from grain.
Okay.
In fact, potato isn't that poutine, basically, the Irish kind
I suppose so.
Moonshine.
I've never had that. Yeah. I've never tried
it. Yeah, but it's basically just vodka with juniper berries tucked into it, yeah.
But now gin is ridiculous. I mean, if you go into the local Tesco's...
It's gone absolutely wild.
They've got about 55 different kinds
of gin.
I know.
Well, we're in Norfolk, and it's got, there must be about 30 or 40 different...
There's one in Bermondsey.
Bermondsey?
Yeah, do you know the Chop House?
Yes.
I went in there one day, which I don't go in anymore because I had a row with them. I know this needs to sound like, you know, but I used to go there. I used to love it. Sit by the river, sit outside. When my daughter lived here, we used to go there all the time. But we went there one day and she wanted a gin and tonic, and they said, do you have any preference? And she said, no, not really, don't mind.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, there's a Bermondsey gin that's made just over there.
Yeah.
So give her that, right?
Yeah,
no, I had a row with her. I went in one uncharacteristically Friday. I was up here on a Friday night and I went to meet a friend of mine and we sat out. She was already there. I sat out, joined her. Asked for a glass of champagne. It took about 10 minutes to bring me a glass of champagne.
Yeah.
We then said, you know, we wanted a menu. That took another 10 minutes. We were there basically 45 minutes.
Yeah.
They didn't manage to bring us anything to
terrible.
It. And they only managed to bring one drink.
Terrible.
And in the end, it was about 37 quid for the two glasses of champagne. And I got up, I said, look, thanks, man, but I'm just not, you know. And they were like, oh, please stay, you know, we don't, we're just really busy at the moment. And we'd asked them for some oysters. I said, how difficult is it to put on a tray of oysters? You don't have to cook them. Just put them on a tray. You didn't manage to do that. We're off. We're going, you know.
I've done that several times and stood up in a huge public rage.
Yeah.
And this is right. Come on, Nadia, we'll leave.
Right.
And just as the waitress brings the food to the table, after then, so I was like, oh, right, all right.
When I was learning my trade as an argumentative person in restaurants, I used to go when I was working for the Hungarian patisserie guy.
Yeah.
And he would always say, you don't have to pay for the food. He said, if you're not happy, you always have to, by law, you always have to pay for the alcohol.
Really?
But if you're not happy with the food,
just tell them
you're not paying for it.
What?
Because we all went. Well, I remember we went out one time for. They used to take us out into Kettner's before it became this kind of trendy place it is now.
Yeah.
For the sort of Christmas do, and he got into a rage about something, and there was like 25 of us there.
Yeah.
And we all, after having one drink or something, we all got up and stormed out of the place all together. You know. And he's like, "I'm not paying for any of this. Yeah. Wow. You know, take some money for the booze.
Wow.
But basically, none of the food.
God, say. Were you ever at those? Columnists' dinners, the Christmas columnists' dinners. That
not really. No, no, not really. I used to, the most kind of bizarre one I think I ever went to was that one. It was at Café de Paris.
Yeah,
which was everyone.
That's right. Yeah,
it was a sort of the executive
team. That's right. Yeah,
and then the weirdest one actually was the one at the Greek restaurant. Do you remember that one?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Where the plates were, and we were then, right. We were in this room.
Yeah,
but there was like two other parties at the same time.
It was very odd,
and it was a really long table. And I got stuck sitting next to old Seymour. David, is it David Seymour?
David
remember him?
Seymour.
Is he still around?
He is. He's on Twitter. Yeah.
He was one of the most boring men alive. And I don't mind saying that because if he's listening,
earnest.
I'm sure he knows that, right? But I ended up sitting next to him and opposite somebody else who was really boring. I was like, how has this been done?
Terrible.
Is this some kind of punishment?
Terrible.
But it was awful.
Yeah. I remember going to one. I hope I haven't told this story before, because if I have, I apologise. But
is it the one about Jonathan Ross?
Oh, it is.
You
okay, so I have
done
stealing all the cigars.
Yeah, I think you have.
Okay, well, we'll skip that. But they were extraordinary.
Did you ever,
lavish.
When you were sort of in charge of all those guys, did you ever get to be invited into the inner sanctum? Because, you know, Jonathan Ross for a long time had that famous Christmas party
that everybody always went to. No, I went to Matthew Freud's place a couple of times, which is an extraordinary house in what's it called, in Primrose Hill.
Is that when he was married to Elizabeth Murdoch?
Yeah, but he's there on his own now, of course. But
well, he's probably not on his own.
Well, no, quite, but not with Elizabeth Murdoch anyway.
No.
But it's like a sort of Bond dwelling behind.
I think I know where it is.
Houses, yeah.
Yeah, I think I know where it is.
And he's got a swimming pool in his forecourt that sort of rises up to be a courtyard in the winter.
Oh, yeah.
And he owns the ground floor of one of the houses next to it, which has turned into a wine cellar.
And right.
It's like, there's a drop
of unbelievable. I took an instant dislike to him many years ago. And in fact, it was when I first really became friends with Piers.
Yeah.
Because they were opening Planet Hollywood in New York, and every single paper decided to send out a correspondent, apart from Today, which was the paper I worked for. And they said, well, you can go, can't you?
Yeah.
And of course, all the PR was being done by Matthew Freud from London.
Yeah.
And he was flying everybody out. So it was Baz Barry Boy, Piers Morgan, you know, all that. I don't know who was there from the Mirror. Piers was with the son, he knows.
Matthew, right. Oh, no.
I don't think it was. No, it was before his time. But anyway, it was, so I had to basically try and get into this thing. And I couldn't, for the life of me, get hold of Matthew Freud.
Yeah.
And when I eventually did get hold of somebody on his team, they were like, well, we're really only doing it for British-based newspapers. I'm like, I am for a British-based newspaper, but I'm just not based there.
Yeah.
I'm based in New York.
Yeah.
So in the end, I just thought, well, I'm just going to have to turn up,
yeah.
you know. And it was when I said, it was old Bruce Willis and Sylvester Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger. Stallone, I don't know if you've ever seen him in the flesh, he's so small.
Really?
I thought, Christ almighty, he looks like a midget.
Really?
I mean, he actually does.
How tall do you think he is?
I think he's about no more than my shoulders.
So like 5'4"?
I think he's about 5'4" or something like that. Yeah,
is
really
that right?
Small. Yeah.
Incredible.
And Schwarzenegger's not massive, you know, but he made him look massive. And Willis is kind of average, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm standing there and there's a sort of velvet rope. And I can see, you know, like Baz, Barry Boy inside, and who I knew a little bit. And I'm sort of waving.
And you're
at
waving
him.
And they're all,
no,
they're
he's
all
waving
looking
back.
The other way.
No, he's waving back. I'm like, no. Piers was the only one that came out and basically gave me a fill on what had happened.
Right.
And gave me some quotes. And I said, oh, thanks, man.
Yeah.
And he was the only one that actually did it. And he didn't even really know me in those days.
Well,
but he just did it out of the goodness of his heart.
He has got a generous heart. Yeah.
Yeah. No so doubt. So that was always why. And that was why I always hated Matthew Freud, because I saw Matthew Freud outside and I said, can you please get me in? I'm here. Yeah. He said, oh, yeah, I'll make sure you can get in later. and he never did.
Frauds, they we used
Matthew
to call
Fraud,
him.
Matthew Fraud, yeah. Well, it's just not a very pleasant man.
But he used
quite
to,
powerful, though.
Very powerful. And they used to be able to put the strong arm on editors and say, do this, do that. And if you don't, you'll never get access to any of these
people. To all
people
the other
again.
People, yeah.
And so people did run kind of stupid interviews with nobody, you know, to please these PR
Well, these
gurus,
are the, these are the kind of super agents, aren't they? Because they took the lead from that guy, Michael Ovitz. Do you remember this
That's
creative
right.
artist agency? He was the first guy.
Yeah.
He left, I think it was called...
was it
No, he was. It wasn't United Artists. It was Rogers and Cowan, I think, who were one of the original old-time sort of, you know, Hollywood agents who were very well-behaved and nice, whereas Michael Ovitz was just really, really... brash, and he just went and he said, right, here's the movie, here's the star, here's the director, here's the, you know, here's the co-star, we give you all of them or we give you none of them, and suddenly it was like, oh,
almost
Christ.
Like Back to the Studio,
how did that happen? And I think Weinstein probably operated a bit like that as well, and so then suddenly here they thought, Freud thought, well, this is a good idea, and they signed up everybody.
You're a very clever bloke though. I remember I got summoned one night when Brexit was just sort of kicking off, so it'd be about December.
And where were you then?
So I'd just launched the New European, right?
Okay.
So I was obviously interesting, and I got this summons to go and see, go to Matthew's house this night, right, to talk about Brexit.
Uh-huh.
And got in. I thought it was going to be like, you know, 30 people or something like that. It was me, Bob Geldof, and Peter Willis, and Matthew Freud. Right?
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And so I'm going in, and I'm sitting next to Bob Geldof. I said, oh, hello, Bob. Yeah, Matt Kelly from the New European. Yeah. And starts... going nuts about Brexit, about the iniquity of
He's quite foul-mouthed, isn't he?
Yeah, but also he's very articulate, but he just sort of like, there's no room for a conversation.
No.
It's a monologue, you know. And, and Matthew's there going into the kitchen, getting like sweet corn. He got some sweet corn, which he described to me as, this is the freshest sweet corn you'll ever taste. Like, and I was tempted to say, well, I know there's no fucking sweet corn plants within about 20 miles of here, so... You know,
I've actually
sure
picked
I could
some
do better.
In Connecticut anyway, off the guy that's just grown it.
It was very nice, the sweet corn, but I wouldn't go mad about it. Right. But inside the house, is like it's like a sort of modern art museum.
I'm
you
sure.
know, amazing.
Yeah.
And huge, you know, huge sweeping open plan room. But Bob Geldof sitting there, and I was there for about 2 hours, and Geldof just ranting away about Brexit, drinking wine.
This was post the actual referendum
result.
Yeah,
so this is about December 2016.
Okay,
and they were kind of working out, how do we respond to this?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and we were seen as part of the possible solution. And Peter Willis, who's
and
a good
was
friend
Willis
of ours.
And what was Willis
doing? So Willis had been invited from... To, as
probably because Freud knew him, presumably.
Yeah, and Freud knows him. And Willis knows... I think Willis knows Matthew very...
Right.
Quite well, you know, as well as you can. Anyway, during this conversation, Freud said something that I thought was absolute genius, which was... Uber, who at the time were going through a massive problem with licensing in London, obviously, and had become notorious as housing, you know, rapists and all of this business, and had massive reputational issue. He said, all Uber's got to do is stick a first aid kit in every Uber car and say that they will be first responders to any emergency health crisis in the street, right?
Wow.
And they will become like the
that
fifth emergency service.
Yeah.
Right. And you just sort of think, Mike, that I would never, I could have sat on a desert island for 10 years and I'd never have thought of that. But he's got that kind of brain about how do you turn something around completely.
Yeah. Well, some people would call that not just psychopathic, but completely and utterly morally bankrupt as well. Because here you are basically going to a company which has been accused of committing the most heinous crimes and going, look, here's how you get out of it. You know, give me a bit of money. Bob's your uncle.
Yeah.
This is why I could never do PR.
Yeah.
So many of our former colleagues are in PR.
Well, they took
and
money.
So much
they?
Of it is crisis PR.
Yeah.
You know, there's a guy called Jack Irvin.
Yeah.
He used to be the editor of the Sun
in Scotland.
Black Jack, they used to call him.
Yeah.
Who basically owns everything in Scotland in terms of PR.
He's got a massive PR business. Mark Hollinshead's got a massive PR business.
Yeah.
Holycomb.
Yeah, well, I mean, God knows how he's managed to do it as well. But there are all these guys who you look at them and you go, how do you manage to do this?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are people really that gullible?
Yeah.
The answer is yes. Ian Monk, who left the Express under a bit of a cloud, went to work for McLaurin, which was one of the huge businesses at the time.
Yeah.
He's now representing people like Wayne Rooney, and he's got his own business. And he said to me, he said, you won't believe it. When I first went to McLaurin, which was already a very well-established PR company, he said, do you know how they thought you got stories into papers? And I said, no. He said, they thought the best thing to do is to send a fax to the editor's office. I said, that's not how you do it. And he started ringing up like individual correspondents, like consumer correspondent for this, health correspondent for that. And he's like, and they were all amazed at the fact that there's been page leads in the papers every day. Amazing.
Do you know what I heard?
And
about,
he said nobody knew it.
About Wayne Rooney, by the way.
Yeah.
You know that shaggy.
He's got a now Sunday Times column.
Yeah. And but it, very good, apparently.
Well, it's very well written. Yeah. But I don't think he wrote
it. I'm not sure he wrote it. But
I mean, I'll try and read it in his voice, right? And then you tell me that he wrote it.
Yeah. But Wazza, as he's known, apparently, you remember the granny prostitute story? Apparently, it was total bollocks.
Yes.
That he never had sex with this grandmother. No. At all, complete fabrication. Uh-huh. But for some reason, I don't know the circumstances.
I think I've seen a similar account.
He couldn't get out of it for some reason.
Right,
but it was nonsense.
Maybe it's covering up something worse.
Yeah, quite possibly.
That's sometimes the way.
Quite possibly.
I mean, that's how Max Clifford used to operate, wasn't it?
He was
basically
horrible.
Well, we didn't
scumbag.
Know how horrible.
No.
Until later.
But even before we knew, he was.
But certainly, he was one of those people who would offer something else.
Yeah.
In order not to have something else come out.
That's right. And what he used to do, what his trick was, he would phone up, someone would come into the news for some reason, some civilian who suddenly had done something or whatever, and he'd phone them, he'd phone the papers and say, right, I'm representing so-and-so, and she wants 500,000 quid for the buy-up.
Right.
And he'd never even spoken to the woman.
Right.
And the editors would say, right, yeah, no, and they'd auction for the deal, you know, they'd get the deal. And then he'd go to this woman and say, knowing how much, exactly how much she was worth, and able to say, I can write you a cheque for 50% of that right now, you know. So he was an absolute scumbag.
Horrible man. Yeah, absolutely ghastly. Luckily, I didn't spend too much time in his company.
Yeah.
We're out of time again.
No.
We are. In fact, I think we've actually gone over the normal allotted amount of time.
We've hardly talked about coronavirus.
I know. Amazing. Well, it shows it's possible.
Probably shows that. Yeah, it's probably a good thing.
Well, at some point, it will settle down.
Yeah.
But not yet.
Have you? One thing we should say is we haven't talked about the film Contagion.
Yes.
If you haven't seen Contagion, you've got to watch it. Listeners, watch it.
You've got to watch it.
I think it was it 2004 or 2014?
I think
so. Something
2004, I think.
Yeah, so it's quite old.
My kids enjoyed it because it doesn't look old.
Yes.
And they won't watch an old film.
It's a brilliant film anyway, and it's got a superstar cast, doesn't it?
Matt Damon. Amazing cast.
You know,
incredible. Gwyneth Paltrow.
Gwyneth Paltrow.
Kate Winslet.
Kate, that's right. Who's the guy from the gangster movies? What's his name? Anyway.
Yes, I know.
Brilliant cast.
Yeah, yeah.
But, and the fella from The Matrix, the big black guy from The Matrix.
That's Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what's also great is Outbreak, which is a much older film.
Right.
But also still stands the test of time. And that's Dustin Hoffman, Rene Russo, and another incredible
actor,
Cuba Gooding.
Right.
It's a bit more, it's a bit less like the pandemic scenario.
Right.
But it's more of like Ebola type thing.
Right.
It turns out to be a sort of government problem.
Right.
But it's really good.
But there are moments in Contagion when your jaw drops because it is literally what's happening right now.
Yeah.
Literally.
Well, let's hope not.
And some of the... it's slightly worse, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, here's a mad thought I had. Say this thing was a bit worse, right, and killed people more than it does, and children don't get it, but they do spread it.
Mm.
Imagine if that came along. You'd have a world without adults eventually, wouldn't you? Just kids.
Yeah.
That'd be better.
But they do grow up, though.
Yeah.
What happens then?
Then it's like Logan's Run.
Yeah.
Then you get your sort of career. Oh, the hell with this. We'll work on these screenplays
before next
time.
I'll see you next week, all things being well, unless we've been eaten by the children. This is the Thought Police. He came and knocked on the door one day.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
And I don't like people knocking on my door.
No.
Right? I don't.
Although, to be fair to him, that is how to knock on a door. Go on. Yeah,
yeah, but this is inside a building, right?
Yeah.
So we've got a bell outside the building.
Right.
You don't walk into the building and knock
it's
on the
disturbing.
Door.
Disturbing.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so I look out through the little peephole and I see that it's him, so I let him in. I answer it. And he says, he points at one of the lights, because we've got these automatic lights that come on when you walk, you know?
Yeah.
The motion detectors
types.
And he went, that light up there is never off.
Right.
And that one over there is never on. And I said, right.
Why are you swapping around?
He said, have you noticed whether they go on or off when you walk past them? I said, not really. I'm thinking, why has he knocked on my fucking door to ask you this, right?
Got in. I had no idea. I thought it was going to be like, you know, 30 people or something like that. It was me, Bob Geldof, and Peter Willis and Matthew Freud.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And so I'm going in and I'm sitting next to Bob Geldof. I said, oh, hello, Bob. Yeah, Matt Kelly from the New
York.
And starts going nuts about Brexit, about the iniquity of
it. He's quite foul-mouthed, isn't he?
Yeah, but also he's very articulate.
Yeah.
But he just sort of like, there's no room for a conversation.
No.
It's a monologue, you know.
And
Matthew's there. going into the kitchen, getting like sweet corn. He got some sweet corn, which he described to me as, this is the freshest sweet corn you'll ever taste. Like, and I was tempted to say, well, I know there's no fucking sweet corn plants within about 20 miles of here, so, you know,
I've actually
I can do better.
In Connecticut, anyway, off the guy that's just grown it.
It was very nice, the sweet corn, but I wouldn't go mad about it.
And then I said, look, I don't mind paying for your wine. I said, but I'll tell you what, do you know what? Now you can fuck off. I'm not paying for your wine. This huge row ensued. And poor old Chris is sitting there, because you know he's quite mild-mannered. Doesn't really like all this. And I'm going, it's all kicking off.
You've only been in the place 6 minutes.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.